So we've all seen the Miracle on Ice a million times from the, you know, American perspective. You know, the Al Michaels call, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes, the movie, the miracle. I mean, we're all very familiar with this. So what was it that drew you to want to tell the Soviet side of it?
Yeah, well, I think it's for that exact very reason, is that, you know, we know so well the Miracle on Ice, and on the one hand, it's one of the great American sports stories of all time, but on the other hand, it's a tragedy, I think, in that, you know, the legacy of Soviet hockey was a miracle in itself. You know, not just the dominance, but the artistic achievement that was demonstrated on the ice, the way that they played was a revolution in creativity and sport, and that was forgotten in North America. And I found that to be somewhat tragic, and when I first saw them play, I was mesmerized. I was 15 years old, I got a VHS tape, and for me it was like a religious experience, because I was a, you know, pretty serious hockey player. I played in college and at Yale, and you know, I took it really seriously, and I wondered, you know, how come in such a brutally oppressive system that such free and kind of open improvisational hockey exists, you know? And at the same time, you know, in the system that I grew up playing in, you know, it felt a little bit confining, limiting, aggressive, and you know, it wasn't that creative. And so I wanted to look more into the story, and I was really curious about my own background because of it, because of seeing this. And ultimately, I did some research and found that the experience of this team, and you know, really paralleled the rise and fall of the Soviet Union. What these players went through was similar to what the country was going through at the time.
Speak to using that as kind of a microcosm, using the hockey team as a microcosm to the, you know, the larger collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean, did you have that concept going in, or as you were kind of chronicling this team and you saw these individual players wanting the freedom, you know, what is it, perestroika? Did you have that concept going in of perestroika, you know, players leaving to get out of the system, or is that something you kind of discovered along the way?
A little bit of both. I mean, it was a story about, you know, a guy that sort of believes in the system, is patriotic, and plays for the Soviet Union, represents them, yeah, is captain of the team, true patriot, and then ultimately becomes disillusioned with the system that created him and has to fight against it, you know, which is kind of what the people were going through too, you know, and he had to fight and really take huge risks to his health and family and to fight the system to be able to play and kind of make his own decisions and play in the NHL.
How do you pronounce his name?
Vladislav Fetisov. Sorry, Vyacheslav Fetisov.
Right. Huge figure in the movie. How did you go about contacting him? Like getting a hold of him to participate in the documentary?
Yeah, I mean, initially I didn't know what role he was going to play in the film, if at all. And I knew he was important because he was such he's one of the most decorated athletes in Soviet history. And he was captain of this team, but I couldn't reach him. And finally, when I reached him, he just was like stonewalling me, and I kept going and going, and ultimately one day he called back. It was actually the last day of the shoot in Russia, and said that he would give me 15 minutes, and I took it, and you know, because it's better than nothing, and who yeah. knows what could happen, and basically he came in, and he's a very kind of interesting guy. He's a little bit aggressive and hard to read, a little somewhat, you just can't predict him, and he demands respect right away. So right away I knew this guy was an interesting character right when I started interviewing him, and my goal was just to keep moving it and getting deeper and deeper. And ultimately that first interview lasted 5.5 hours. It was the first of three interviews, and
it was supposed to be 15 minutes, he said, and it went 5.5 hours.
He said that he's never opened up like this to anybody.
Really?
A journal.
I mean, he's probably worried of how it's going to be received. Maybe once he got that feeling of freedom, mirroring the movie in a way. Now, just taking it back, you mentioned that you were watching it on a VHS tape when you were 15. Yeah. Where'd you grow up? What's a little bit
of
your
backstory? Chicago. I grew up in Chicago.
Blackhawks fan?
Basically, I watched, you know, Dennis Savard, Jeremy Roenick kind of days, and I was That's where I grew up.
So a huge hockey guy, you played, and then...
Yeah, I played, and you know, I was really serious. I went to prep school and got recruited to play Division I hockey and sort of achieve my dream. That was sort of the goal. And I wanted to play in the NHL, but it didn't happen.
Right, well, that's hard. Yeah. How did you do the transition from hockey to filmmaking?
You know, I had to... As soon as I realized that I wasn't going to play in the NHL, I was thinking about what I was good at and what I liked and what my skills were. And I was a political science major, and I didn't want to be a politician or go to law school or something like that. And my roommate was writing and doing sketch comedy and shooting videos, and I got into
it. For where? For...
It was like a group at Yale.
Oh, okay.
You know, a sketch comedy group. And I thought that was interesting, and for some reason something clicked inside of me, and I started reading and looking more into that, and kind of started doing my own stuff and research into it, and said, hey, listen, I think I could be a pretty damn good storyteller if I put my mind to it.
Right.
And that's how that started, you know.
Did you have any idea that you would revisit your hockey roots? Or
Never. I thought that was done. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of cool that, you know, you put that aside, you start off in this new direction, and then funny how life works, it brings it all back around.
It is crazy. I never felt that I contributed the way I felt I could to hockey, to the sport, and for some reason, God sort of brought me back to it, or, you know, whether you believe in God or not, I don't know. But
sure.
Somehow I was led back to the story and was able to say what I needed to say about the sport and kind of... Yeah, about my experience.
Tell me a little bit about the production itself. Like, how long? I know you said that interview was, what, 5.5 hours. But how long did it take to shoot the whole thing?
Yeah, so I spent 10 days in Russia initially and got a lot of interviews. Let's just say 10.
Okay.
And they were lengthy. And then once I realized that Fetisov was kind of going to be my main character, I had to interview him another couple times. And so that's basically it. And then I spent majority of the time in post-production and editing and kind of writing the story. It was a grueling process.
How frustrating was it that you couldn't get the coach, that he declined to be interviewed? And why do you think he declined?
Yeah, initially I was I don't know why he declined. He never explained himself. He just said, I don't want to do this.
Was he nice about it? Or
no, he was not nice. He was not. Nice, but you know, that's his that was his sort of thing, you know. So but I think that, you know, you have to just keep moving, and sometimes there's blessing in disguise. I was certainly very frustrated initially and was bummed, you know, because I thought I could maybe get something great. You know, but you know, I'm happy with the movie I made, and I think that it's for a reason. There's silver lining somehow. All that happened, like even the fact that I didn't know Fetisov was going to be the guy, and somehow.
Yeah, maybe everything. If you got the coach, you wouldn't have focused on Fetisov.
Yeah,
you know,
and I didn't get one of the other guys who spoke good English, and
yeah.
I don't know why I didn't get him, but I'm happy that I didn't now, you know?
Exactly. You're here in Washington, D.C., and our biggest player is Alexander Ovechkin, obviously, which he's featured at the end of the movie, too. So, you know, pitch this to my listeners will be a Washington audience. Well, what can specifically Washington viewers get out of this with Ovi?
Well, I mean, I think that even though it's not specifically sort of about politics, I think what's fascinating, one of the aspects that's fascinating about this movie is that, you know, sports was created in the Soviet Union specifically for political reasons. Yeah. You know, Stalin, you know, knew that the power of sport to convince people and as a tool to prove superiority of the Soviet system. And these players
nationalism,
pride, all of that stuff, and you know, Fetisov and his teammates were pawns in this system. And it's fascinating to see that beyond the politics and ideology and sort of the sports aspect of it, it's really just a very human and emotional story, you know, that reaches, you know, the film's been to Cannes, Telluride, Toronto, major festivals. It's been critically received very well because it's a universal, powerful, kind of strange human story, you know.
What's been the coolest stop along all those festivals along the way?
They're all...
Was there a moment you were, like, sitting in a theater at a festival
like,
and
a
pinched
lot.
Yourself?
Yeah. A lot. Yeah. Basically, because Cannes was amazing because it's Cannes, you know. And you have a Russian hockey legend in Cannes. It's the weirdest thing. Then I was in Toronto and Wayne Gretzky and his family was in the audience.
Wow.
And Scotty Bowman Hall. And for me as a hockey player, it was like
pinching. Did you talk to him? Or?
Yeah.
You got to talk to Gretzky?
Afterwards, he said he loved the movie. His wife was raving about it. And then in Chicago, my hometown, it was great. We won the audience award. Yeah. And also LA at AFI, we won the audience award. So that was great with my home. And then Moscow was amazing because... Oh, it's God. About Russia, you know, so it was scary. Amazing.
Were you worried about taking it there? Oh, yeah. Like, how's this going to be received?
Oh, that was the most worried I was.
Yeah, yeah. But it worked out okay for you?
Yeah. People received really loved it.
Talk about it in Moscow. How did that...
Oh, well, I mean, for me,
afterwards? And,
I thought if this doesn't work here, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
You know, because it's about them and what... But it was... They gave me a standing ovation for 15 minutes, and people were crying. Oh, wow. And they had an intense emotional relationship to the film because of their past, and they get it, and they feel it. They live this, you know. It's like something that was very personal to them.
Do they feel your movie and the fact that, you know, you're this American director
from Chicago?
Do they feel almost like a...
Oh, they felt strange.
I mean, well, because our two governments are still really at odds on a lot of stuff. But is this almost like your little moment? I mean, is it thaw a little bit? You know, here's this American director.
Honestly, I felt very warm. Right. I felt warmth from them.
Oh, good.
Rocky
IV warmth?
They felt that it was a little bit strange that an American guy could tell... this emotional story about their history and in that way, you know, for them, a couple people in the audience raised their hand and said, we don't understand how you can make this movie. You know, why didn't one of our directors make this? And it's a little bit ashamed. We feel a little bit, you know,
had they not tried
it's like,
before?
It's like if somebody I think they had,
but
it's like if some Russian were to come to the US and say, I'm going to make a movie about like
the miracle on ice.
from the American perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But that's why I think that's what makes it such a unique story.